This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Friday, April 24th, 2009. I'm Caleb Brown. The High Court handles several cases dealing with the Fourth Amendment this term. Ilya Shapiro, Cato Senior Fellow in Constitutional Studies and editor of Cato's Supreme Court Review, comments.
So the Fourth Amendment, in relevant part, guarantees us the freedom from unreasonable searches and seizure by the government. It means that usually the government needs a warrant. Sometimes there are exceptions to the warrant rule. Like, for example, if a cop is chasing a criminal and he runs into his house, they don't need to get a warrant before they pursue the guy into his house. Or if you consent, obviously, the cop can search you. Or there's other suspicions. If they see something something a little off when they stop you for a police stop in your car, they can, you know, ask you to step out or look inside your car if they have a reasonable suspicion that something criminal might be going on. So this term, there are five Fourth Amendment cases. The Roberts Court generally is kind of establishing a fairly middle road view of the Fourth Amendment. Not too many stark divisions on the court. Alito is generally the most pro-government on these types of cases. Stevens is generally the most pro-defendant. But there's not that much disparity. A lot of unanimous or not too split rulings. This year, there are a few cases which are producing split rulings. In January, in the case of Herring versus the United States, the court ruled that the exclusionary rule doesn't apply when a policeman in the next county makes a mistake about a warrant. So in this case, Mr. Herring was stopped by a policeman who called in to his dispatch to see if there were any outstanding warrants. They checked with a neighboring county, which had a computer record that was erroneous about this guy, a warrant that should have been quashed. But the policeman working the computer told them that there was an outstanding warrant. He was arrested, and of course, drugs were found. There are always drugs cases. And he moved to quash the evidence of the drugs. And the court, by a 5-4 vote, refused to apply the exclusionary rule because in Chief Justice Roberts' opinion, the error was isolated negligence attenuated from the search. And, quote, to trigger the exclusionary rule, police conduct must be sufficiently deliberate that exclusion can meaningfully deter it, and sufficiently culpable that such deterrence is worth the price paid by the justice system. So, of course, we're always balancing, do we let clearly guilty people off on a technicality versus we want to prevent police abuses and arresting and searching people willy-nilly. I think it's a close call, and I agree with the court on this one. I think my colleague Tim Lynch might narrowly go the other way, but it's a close call about where you draw the line for the exclusionary rule generally. And I think here, precisely because the error in the computer of the neighboring county was so attenuated from what the arresting officer was doing, I don't think you're really going to get at the arresting officer's negligence by applying the exclusionary rule here. So I think the court got that right, but it's a very close case, and there's disputes really about how significant this case is going forward, whether it's just something isolated about this weird occurrence or whether the court is going to start chipping away further at the exclusionary rule. And we'll have articles, two of them, in the Supreme Court Review on that issue. On Tuesday, the court issued a ruling that was 5-4 as well, with kind of an odd bedfellow alignment here, and that limited the scope of vehicle searches. So in this case, Arizona versus Gant, Mr. Gant was arrested, placed in the police cruiser, locked up, handcuffed, in the cruiser, and then they searched his car and found drugs, of course. And the court narrowly decided that this was improper because the purpose of having a vehicular search is to prevent the arrestee from having access to weapons or otherwise hiding evidence of a crime, et cetera, et cetera. And here, the ruling was that officers who lack a warrant can search the passenger compartment after the occupant is arrested, only if it's reasonable to believe that the person can still gain access to the vehicle or if the vehicle contained evidence relevant to the arrest. Here, his original arrest wasn't for drugs. It was for driving on a suspended license. And, he was properly arrested for that. But again, he had no access to whatever they were could look for in the car, and they weren't going to find evidence of his suspended license by searching further. In fact, the police, when asked, said, "On what justification were you doing this? Why were you looking in this car?" And they said, "Well, because the law allows us to." And here the court says, "No, the law does not allow you to do that." And interestingly, Scalia and Thomas joined the majority on this case, and with Souter, Ginsburg, and Stevens, whereas Breyer, who's traditionally on the liberal side, joined the dissent, joined Justice Alito's dissent, saying that the police were justified in doing this. And the dissent was basically based on the precedent, the longstanding 27-year-old precedent that police had kind of expansive powers to search vehicles. The majority disagreed with that, and again, this kind of stare decisis issue, I think, preserving the old precedent was what caused this weird confluence of justices. The other case I want to talk about was argued on Tuesday, the same day Gantt was decided, and this is a case in which we actually filed a brief. This is Safford Unified School District versus Redding out of Arizona. In this case, in a middle school in Arizona, a 13-year-old girl was caught red-handed with prescription ibuprofen. And of course, the school district has a zero-tolerance policy on guns and drugs and all the rest of it, and prescription ibuprofen is verboten. So, she was caught red-handed with it, and she said that one of her classmates, one of her putative friends, Savannah Redding, was the one who gave her this illegal contraband. So they searched Savannah Redding's backpack, didn't find anything. Then they took her into the nurse's office and searched her outer clothing, didn't find anything. And then they had her stretch her bra and expose her, stretch her panties so that exposing her genital area and her breasts, shaking her underclothing so that the nurse and another female school official could inspect her body to see if there's any contraband there. And then was kept in the principal's office for another few hours without having her mother being called or anything else. And no further drugs were found. Nobody else was strip searched. Savannah's mother and Savannah filed a lawsuit alleging that her Fourth Amendment rights were violated in this case. Wanted to recover damages from the school board and the school officials. And Cato argues that the search was, it was obviously egregious. It was beyond the scope of what it needed to be. But the difficulty here isn't just in the court having to issue a ruling about, well, was this search justified or not? It's laying down a rule that school officials in future can follow, because, of course, school officials do, under existing precedent, have discretion and authority to preserve the health and safety of their students in their school. So, what we think should happen is that the court should lay down a rule that the strip searches are reasonable only when school officials have highly credible evidence, something more than a schoolmate, accusing, trying to defer blame onto someone else. Credible evidence that, first of all, the student in question is in possession of this contraband that poses a significant danger to the school, and secondly, that the student had actually hidden the objects in a place that only a strip search will uncover. So here, who knows if the students would want to ingest pills that were, hidden in somebody's underwear or so forth. Here, there's insufficient basis for the strip search. The evidence on which they performed it was insufficient, and it was disproportionate to the investigation. I mean, if there was a ticking time bomb that was, tiny or something, let's suppose that there was technology to have, miniature ticking time bombs or something, and they needed to find this before the school exploded, well, that would probably be more justification than, there's ibuprofen out there. If the danger is prescription ibuprofen being distributed, well, isolate the student, call their parent, what have you. This was just wrong on so many levels.
Ilya Shapiro is a senior fellow in constitutional studies at the Cato Institute and editor of Cato's annual Supreme Court Review. You can get your copy of the review at cato.org.